So what is IBS? Is it a catch-all term that doctors use when they don't know what's up with you? Because I come across this all the time. People saying, oh yeah, it's just the doctor doesn't know what's wrong. And so they just say this IBS, but that's rubbish. So the simple answer is, this podcast, Beyond Bar From Blues, is our way to document the lessons we've learned on growing our business, Men's IBS Mastery, towards helping 1 million men. Our hope is you use the lessons and wisdom for your own journey and maybe someday soon partner with us to achieve IBS Mastery and dominate in your personal and professional life. We hope you share and enjoy. Hi, and welcome back to Beyond Bar From Blues podcast. So April is IBS Awareness Month, but why raise awareness about IBS? You know, why bother? So it's crucial to raise awareness because we want more people to know about it so we can reduce the stigma around it and people can get help if they think they've got it, like maybe you have it or you think you have it. And if they have got IBS, then the people around them, whether that's strangers or family, friends or whoever, you know, work colleagues, hopefully they will be more helpful, understanding and empathetic about it. And I find it really frustrating how so many people have the same negative experience of being told or feeling like people are thinking, you know, you're making it up. It's, you know, it's just IBS, or it's only IBS. It's just a bit of IBS. So it's no real problem, or just get on with it. It's just IBS. And unfortunately, IBS can leave you feeling ashamed, embarrassed and stuck with how to manage your symptoms and how to improve them. So we really want to raise awareness to make things better so people like you don't have to live under the stigma and struggle. And raising awareness can also empower people with IBS to speak up for themselves and seek the right medical care, because when people know about their condition, but obviously their knowledge needs to come from a trusted source like their doctor, dietitian or other healthcare professional or like the National Health Service, a trusted source, then they're better equipped to make more informed decisions and access the right support that they need. And I think, you know, raising awareness can also have a ripple effect by people getting an earlier diagnosis rather than the average of about 6 years. So years and years of going backwards and forwards. And maybe, you know, it's been the same for you going to the doctors and other specialists, maybe having loads of tests and investigations and all those years of stress and worry and uncertainty. And for some people with a confirmed diagnosis, they don't feel confident in it. And oftentimes it's because they don't have control of their symptoms, despite them trying loads and loads of stuff. But this can be because they haven't tried the right stuff, or they haven't had help from a healthcare professional. You know, they're DIY and they're trying to do it all by themselves. And more awareness can help towards more access to public toilets, because there's loads of towns and places where toilets are permanently closed now, unfortunately. And it seems like, you know, there's loads of shops and service stations that before COVID, they had customer toilets, but since then, they're not available anymore. I don't know why that is. Is it because they don't like having to keep them stocked and cleaned? And maybe they felt it was quite nice during COVID because there was less work for the staff and they saved money from people not using the toilets, you know, using the toilet roll, the hand soap, the hand dryers or paper towels and all the cleaning products to keep the toilets looking nice and smelling nice. And yeah, I'm not sure, but yeah, there's loads of places, like you've probably noticed that too as well, that no longer have customer toilets since COVID. And actually, even if you don't have a gut condition like IBS, because like older people or someone who's got little kids, it's not nice for anyone being out and about when there's no toilets, you know, there's nowhere to go, especially if you need a number two, because it doesn't feel very nice and you can worry that you might accidentally poo yourself. And then if you have got a gut condition, then that's even worse. And also, it's not good to hang on to a poo, whether it's because there's no toilets around or you're ignoring the urge because you're too busy or, you know, got something to do. You think, I'll just finish this first. So you ignore it and you just leave it till you've finished whatever it is that you're doing and then decide to go. Whatever the reason, not going to the toilet when you need to have a poo is not good, because it can give you tummy ache and it can lead to being constipated. So yeah, it's not good. Also, greater awareness can help the medical world, and then in turn that benefit comes back to you and other people with IBS or suspected IBS by promoting more research into the condition, finding a diagnostic test or another way to diagnose it other than how it's currently done, helped find new treatments and therapies, and basically how to better manage the condition and improve outcomes for people like you with IBS. So raise awareness to get more people to know about it, reduce stigma, promote an early diagnosis, improve understanding, and hopefully more people will be more empathetic about it. And also, as I mentioned, like, you know, having better access to public toilets and prompt councils and stores and services to have toilets available again. And then have more research and innovation into this area, because ultimately we want to enhance the quality of life for people living with this horrible condition. And sharing this podcast with other people would also help to raise the awareness of this debilitating lifelong condition that can have a massive impact on a person's whole life. And maybe you know firsthand what this is like as well. So what is IBS? Is it a catch-all term that doctors use when they don't know what's up with you? Because I come across this all the time. People are saying, oh yeah, it's just the doctor doesn't know what's wrong. And so they're just saying it's IBS, but that's rubbish. So the simple answer is no, because IBS is a recognised medical condition, and governments around the world and government bodies, they've spent time and money, so resources, into researching it. And although there is more research needed and it's ongoing, they have developed clinical guidelines that are being updated and consensus statements, and there's loads of medical books. So they wouldn't have wasted, and they wouldn't be wasting, all those resources and training doctors and other healthcare professionals in this area if it was some made-up condition, would they? So it is a genuine, real condition. And I also think it's not very helpful for people to say it's not a real condition for someone with IBS, because it's disempowering for them as well. And that's also putting that uncertainty in their mind, which isn't helpful. And then they're scouring around for the real diagnosis in their terms, because it is actually IBS, but they think maybe because it's something else, because you've got these people, influencers, and other people saying IBS is a BS from a diagnosis. And then they're constantly struggling to find a way of managing it and managing their symptoms. So yeah, it's not good. So IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, with syndrome meaning a group of symptoms which consistently occur together, or a condition characterized by a set of associated symptoms, hence IBS, where common symptoms include stomach pain, bloating, and changes in bowel habits. And I think this is part of the reason why some people think IBS is a catch-all term, because it is a collection of symptoms and people can have a different experience. So like James has stomach pains, bloating, and flits between being constipated and having diarrhea, compared to Nick, who has stomach pain and diarrhea, but also has backache. It's still unclear what the cause of IBS is, and there's no proven diagnostic test for it at the moment. So although that's the case, it isn't a catch-all term. And if you've been diagnosed with IBS, but you're not happy with that, maybe you think something else going on, you could actually go back to your doctor and then ask them to go over everything again, maybe request some more investigations or whatever. Or you could choose a different doctor and get a second opinion. So that is an option for you. How is it diagnosed? Well, I'm not going to go into that here, because you can jump into episode one, What Others Don't Tell You About IBS, of our podcast, Beyond Bathroom Blues. So you can go there and check that out. I've also created a free guide specifically to help people with the diagnosis process, so you know what to do and what to expect, and help you avoid the pitfalls. Because the amount of people that have come to me with supposedly a diagnosis of IBS from their doctor, but unfortunately, because the person didn't know what they didn't know, and it's not their fault, the result was inaccurate. So I had to send them back to their doctor. Not that made me feel comfortable. Clearly, I don't like doing it, but I want the best for the person. So I've checked through everything with them. And yeah, so they needed to go back to the doctor. They've had to make some changes and then go through the whole process again, which is right bugger. And it also wastes their time and money, and you know, as well as the health services, resources. And then there's the fretting and worrying in between diagnosis or getting the diagnosis, about what is actually wrong with them. You know, is it IBS or is it something else? So it's best to get it right first time. And my guide will help you. And you can grab the free guide from the link that I'll put in this episode's description. So what's the impact of IBS? So IBS affects about 10% of people worldwide, and this significantly varies between countries, but it's hard to know the exact number due to various reasons, like different ways of studying and collecting and looking at data, people not taking part in surveys, how doctors around the world diagnose IBS that can be different. Also, IBS is often underreported and misdiagnosed. And in some countries, more women go to the doctors than men, which might then make it seem like more women have IBS than men. But without this accurate information, we don't really know. So regardless of that, it is a lot of people living with IBS. So if we go off the 10%, which may be under or overestimating it, that's nearly 800 million people with IBS. So that's a lot. And in the US, it's estimated that the direct cost, so all the healthcare appointments, tests, procedures, medications, is over $1 billion annually. And then there's the person's own costs. So like many men that we work with, they've spent a lot of money on various supplements and remedies and over-the-counter medications and prescriptions and various foods like gluten-free, wheat-free, lactose-free, that kind of thing. And these foods typically cost way more than the regular version. So their grocery bills are bigger than maybe they need to be. And they've spent money on home test kits and alternative therapies like acupuncture, colonic irrigation, and loads of mild stuff as well. So all in an attempt to try and get a grip of their symptoms. IBS can prevent people from being able to work. So they're either unemployed or they need to take loads of sick days. So then their take-home pay is less than it would be. And then when they are in work, they might not be able to be as productive or doing as good a job as they could do. So this affects their career and progression and the knock-on effect to their family life, but can get money back. It's not finite. Yeah, it might not be nice waste of money, but you can actually get it back. But time is finite. You know, once time is gone, it's gone for good. You'll never get it back. And importantly, it's the impact that IBS, as I mentioned, you know, like psychologically, the physical and mental health, the burden of living with IBS day in, day out, and battling random and horrible flare-ups or IBS attacks, whatever you like to call them, you know, it's hideous. And it's because of all this why me and Glenn do what we do, because, you know, we want to help men overcome their IBS so they can get back to living their life on their terms without their symptoms dictating to them. So what can you do about your symptoms? Well, a good place to start is by using an IBS journal or a diary to log everything as you go. And I say that because if you try and remember what you've eaten earlier, can you remember what you had for breakfast or yesterday? It's difficult for some people. And if you're leaving it, then you're more likely to forget little things. And it could be the thing that you've forgotten to record that could actually be the thing that's triggering your symptoms. So it's best to record everything as you go so you don't forget to log something. So it's far easier and more accurate to fill it in as you go. And I know it's a bit of a faff, but you'll get used to it. And remind yourself about why you're recording all this stuff, because it can provide you with valuable insights. But, you know, clearly you need to know what you're looking for and how to interpret all. And obviously a dietitian can help you with that. And once you've logged everything for a week or 2 weeks, you can look back over it and see if you can spot any trends or patterns to what's triggering your symptoms. And you could also share this with your doctor, like if you haven't got a diagnosis, that would be helpful information for them. Or even if you have got a diagnosis, they could still look through it, and it would be quicker for them to look through that and more informative for them to look through it and then work out what medications or what options are available to you to help manage your symptoms, compared to them asking you all the questions and then you trying to remember what's happened, what symptoms, when it was, how long, how bad. Maybe they might ask you about your food and stuff as well. So if you've got it all logged down in your IBS journal, then there's so much better and so much easier. And yeah, as I said, you can also share that with your dietitian, who can go through everything with you. So then together, you can then come up with a suitable and tailored plan for you. And a good IBS journal will obviously allow you to track what you eat and drink along with symptoms. But like in my one that I've created, that I give to my clients, or you can buy my men's IBS journal from Amazon, I've included other factors that can play a role in symptoms like medications and supplements, your mood, activity, sleep. And then there's also space to reflect and review the day and the overall week. So That's helpful as well. And if you've been struggling to work out what to do for the best to help your symptoms, then you can speak with your doctor who can prescribe you some medications. But they can also refer you on to other healthcare professionals, like if they think you need or maybe you want more investigations, or if they think or you think you'd benefit from seeing a dietitian or maybe a psychologist, depending on what's going on and your situation. And there isn't a one size fits all to manage IBS, like say celiac disease, where the person needs to avoid gluten for life. And gluten is the protein found in wheat, barley and rye. And this causes damage to the small intestine, but with IBS, it affects people differently and different things work for different people. So it's a matter of finding what works for you. And the quickest and safest way to do this is to work with a healthcare professional versus the stress and the hassle and the minefield and the risk that's involved with trying to work it out yourself or relying on unqualified people. So the main ways to manage IBS is one, medication, and it's always wise to speak with your doctor or pharmacist about your options. Two, dietary changes, but don't be fooled into thinking, you know, that there's no risk involved because it's only, yeah, it's only food, you know, where's the harm? Because like Rob, the other week, he followed the dietary advice from some influencer who also had IBS, and he ended up getting really ill. His doctor found that he was deficient in several nutrients. His IBS was worse, and actually he was on a particular statin medication for his high cholesterol levels, so he shouldn't have even been having the grapefruit because it increases the effect of the medication and also caused him some horrible side effects. But he was following the influencer's advice. He put his faith in her, but she had no qualifications or background in medicine or nutrition, and she'd done no assessment on him. So even if she did know about the medication interactions, she wouldn't have been able to provide any guidance or adjust his treatment. And understandably, he had no idea either. Three, lifestyle changes. And again, be wary of where or who you get your information and advice from. And four, psychological approaches such as CBT, so cognitive behavioral therapy or hypnotherapy, but not alternative therapies such as acupuncture or reflexology because of the lack of scientific evidence to support their use in IBS. But obviously, if you want to, you can go ahead and try these other things. But you could be wasting your money and time by doing that. And I know quite a lot of people who have tried these and found no benefit. But yeah, as I say, it's obviously up to you. So I hope you found this helpful. And please share this with others so they can also benefit. And together we can raise the awareness and help more people with IBS. Thanks for listening and catch you next time.